And I am Enda, also known as Enda's Corner on Twitter.
And if you listen to our first episode, you know who we are and what this show is about. But we'll also remind you that we do have a spoiler policy, and that is that we spoil shit. And also that we cuss. So I don't know if I mentioned that in the first one, but if you listen to it all the way through, you figured it out. Yeah. So if you have any questions or concerns, or just want to give us feedback, you can tweet us at blackgirlsquee, all one word, or email us at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. So without further ado, we're going to get into our squee-worthy news. First off, we've got Amel LaRue, a well-known singer-songwriter, is starting a new hair product line that's supposed to meet the needs of all kinds of hair types. So, squee! That'll be good. I hope I can get it in my area, because I don't know about where you are, but the ethnic beauty supplies are not plentiful when you go to your regular drugstore. You've got Pantene and Revlon and
yeah.
You might be lucky to get some pink lotion, but that's really not going to do much for this hair. But
the name of her brand is called Beautiful Us, and you can find her Night Before conditioner that is manufactured by that brand. So be on the lookout for that, and if you want to know more about it, she did an interview with Hello Beautiful, and you can read about it there.
Okay. I'll try to put that link in the show notes. And speaking of singer-songwriters who are doing new and interesting ventures, take it away, Enda.
Yes. Khalees is now working on a cookbook. And as you know, she had a show on the Cooking Channel for a while. I don't know if it's still going on there, but she has a book entitled My Life on a Plate, Recipes from Around the World, and it includes recipes from Southern soul food, Caribbean, and Asian cuisines, and she's also made some eclectic dishes to reflect herself. So, Khalees is actually a classically trained chef, and so if you remember her last album that came out last year was called Food, and each song was a food themed title, had a food themed title.
Okay.
Squee!
So that's interesting. All those cultures are actually, I think, cultures that are part of her ancestry, so, or her background. So that's great that she's offering such diverse dishes. And our next story is Tatiana
Fazlazeya. Say that. I have no idea, honey. I'm so sorry for butchering your name.
Sorry. Bless you.
Yes. Because she is one of our favorites around here.
All right. Tell us more about her, Enda.
Well, Tatiana is the founder of Stop Telling Women to Smile. So if you've ever seen those posters in like larger cities where you live, or just her artwork online, she is the one behind that. She's expanding her projects with some other things that she's doing this year. She's doing a t-shirt collaboration with a photographer named Texas Isaiah Valenzuela. It's called Kinship. This project will highlight the names of black cisgender and transgender women whose lives were taken by sexual violence, and the profits of that are going to go to the Trans Women of Color Collective. And she's also working on a zine that'll be out later this summer, and it's also focusing on street harassment.
So that's a lot of powerful and needed work. So thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for that. And please be sure to follow that and support that movement. Our next story is Sudanese model Nicor Paul takes on racism and colorism in the fashion industry. Nicor Paul recently went on Instagram to discuss treatment of dark-skinned black women in the fashion industry, how they have to bring their own makeup to shoots, and said that she also said that they try to make darker women look ratchet in their photo shoots and fashion shows. She says she also doesn't get jobs because she's blue black. So definitely colorism on top of already racism in the fashion industry, which is there hasn't been much of a dent made to it, even in 2015, which is sad to say.
Right. Yeah, so kudos to her for bringing light to that. And it's like we were saying before, this is like 30, 40 years after Naomi, you know, Iman, and you know, all of them, and black models are still, you know, going through all of this type of stuff, you know, in the modeling industry, and it's just ridiculous and unnecessary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, good for Nicor for speaking up about it, and hopefully people will be shamed into making some changes.
Yes.
So, our next story is really squee-worthy. We have several black women who are nominees for the 2015 Emmy Awards. Some of them are first-time nominees. And we have Viola Davis and Taraji P. Henson making history as two black women are nominated for lead actress in a drama.
In the same year.
Yeah. So they're going up against each other, unfortunately. But, you know, hopefully there's that just doubles the chances of one of them walking away with the award.
Yes.
So we're going to look on the bright side for that. Other Black Girl Squee-worthy nominees are Queen Latifah for Bessie, which is one that Inda called in our last episode. So they were listening. They were listening to you, Inda.
They weren't just listening for Queen Latifah. Who else got nominated?
The movie Bessie itself was nominated for Best Television Movie. Uzo Aduba was nominated for Best Supporting Actress in a Drama for Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. Cicely Tyson was nominated for her brilliant stint on How to Get Away with Murder. She was nominated for Guest Actress in a Drama, along with Candy Alexander for a Scandal.
Yeah, and Monique also got a supporting actress in a TV film or a limited series for Bessie.
Yes. And speaking of supporting actress, Regina King was in the same category for American Crime. And yeah. Angela Bassett for American Horror Story Freak Show. So, and I'm seeing one more. Niecy Nash was nominated for supporting actress in a comedy for Getting On.
Yeah, I've never seen that show.
Me either. But hey, congratulations to her.
Yep.
And congratulations. Oh, you got the market cornered on that squee, but congratulations to all the nominees. I don't know if we're actually going to watch, but I'd be more interested to watch this than last year's Oscars. So, but I will be following the live tweet.
Exactly.
It should be popping, especially if somebody wins. If one of them, if Viola or Taraji wins lead actress, oh, it's about to be on. The Twitter timeline is gonna be lit.
Oh, yeah.
It's gonna be like,
Oh, and if they both lose, that's just gonna be
ooh,
no.
no. They better
Oh,
not. They better
the
not.
dragging will be epic.
No. Emmy so white, you don't want that hashtag. You
No,
don't
you
want it.
don't.
So, moving on, we're going to get to those are our sort of news and notes. And our next two topics are going to take up a little more time to discuss. First of all, we want to talk about Amanda Stenberg and her debate, I suppose you'd say, with Kylie Jenner, and how it placed the spotlight on sort of the violence done to black women's bodies through cultural appropriation and things like that. Recently, maybe a week and a half ago, Kylie Jenner posted a picture of herself in corn rolls. That's
Corn rolls.
CORN ROLLS.
Corn rolls. I still just can't.
Yes, with the hashtag white girls do it better. So, Miss Stenberg was not having it. She clapped back with the following statement. Amanda responded with this remark, quote, "When you appropriate black features and culture but fail to use your position of power to help black Americans by directing attention toward your wigs instead of police brutality or racism, hashtag white girls do it better," end quote. So, brief, to the point, still stinging clapback from Miss Stenberg.
Yes.
And who gets attacked for this? Of course, the black girl.
Yeah.
Because people crawled out of the woodwork to cape for Miss Jenner, saying that Jenner was just a kid and didn't deserve these attacks from Stenberg, who is a year younger.
Yeah.
It's funny how when black girls critique white girls, that all of a sudden they become women,
Yeah,
and
and
the
it's an
critique,
attack. It's not a
yes,
critique, it's an attack.
exactly. But if it were the other way around, there would just be, oh, well, that's my opinion. It's just my opinion.
Yeah.
So there's a number of things that happened in this public debate. We saw that Stenberg was treated as an adult when she's only 16. And a 17-year-old who's been allegedly dating 25-year-olds is still seen as a child. And everybody's been calling Stenberg all kinds of things, that all kinds of insults and names that she doesn't deserve, just for speaking up and saying what many people have wanted to say, but saying it in a far more succinct and brilliant way.
Yeah.
So, she doesn't deserve those attacks. What Justin Bieber and Andy Cohen, those people, all these people on Twitter that are caping for Kylie, those are attacks. Those are not critiques. They're not coming with any kind of substance. Calling someone a jackhole is not a critique. That is an attack.
And then try to reduce the whole thing to a social media, cat fight.
Yeah.
Which was totally not the point of that. Just.
Amanda came at Kylie with a substantive argument. Calling somebody a jackhole is not a substantive argument. So before we, I just want to, I hope that people have been writing about Amandla, and especially Ebony Ryder, Jamila Lemieux. She wrote a great piece supporting Amandla, and we want to make sure that we all remember, even though she's been so brave and courageous to speak up against a number of instances of cultural appropriation, we do want to keep in mind that she's just 16 and she needs to be protected, and we don't need to proclaim her the next prophet or black leader. We just need to let her be 16.
I'm also unfortunately found out yesterday that she actually did get chased off Tumblr. She said she was taking a break from it for a while, so which is, like I said, really unfortunate and just unnecessary for her to have to go through that.
You don't do that to children.
You
Nobody's chasing Kylie off Instagram.
know.
Oh man, that's a shame, 'cause she has a really great blog.
Yeah. It's like I was saying, with her, black girls from a very early age, it's like we're kind of just socialized to be a lot older and a lot wiser than we are because of the way we're treated. And like I said, I'm glad that Amandla is so, she's so aware and she's so wise at her age, but I just hate that she just has to be because that's just the way it is for us. But black girls are just not afforded their childhood and their innocence. And so it's just so, well, to say the least, irritating to see, people treating her the way they are and just expecting so much of her.
I just want to read her post again, and I'll try to link this in the show notes because what she said in just a few paragraphs is just so profound, especially when you again consider that this child is only 16. On her blog, you can find this post. Black features are beautiful, black women are not. White women are paragons of virtue and desire. Black women are objects of fetishism and brutality. This, at least, seems to be the mentality surrounding black femininity and beauty in a society built upon Eurocentric beauty standards. While white women are praised for altering their bodies, plumping their lips, and tanning their skin, black women are shamed, although the same features exist on them naturally. The double standard is one string in the netting that surrounds black female sexuality, a web that entraps black women when they claim sexual agency. Deeply ingrained into culture is the notion that black female bodies, at the intersect of oppression, are less than human and therefore unattractive. They are symbols of pain, trauma, and degradation. Often, when they are sexualized, it is from a place of racial fetishism. Black feminine sexuality is a tender spot, tender with deep-rooted suppression and taboo, the effects of which are pervasive. The stigmas surrounding it are embedded in American infrastructure and psyche, as evidenced by the way Black women are sexually assaulted and treated by police, an act that goes frequently unreported by the media. When the media is not ignoring Black women altogether, they are disparaging them. As culture shifts and racial tensions are tested through the vehicle of the Black Lives Matter movement, it is important to question, do female Black lives matter too?
Wow.
Just a brilliant girl right there.
Yeah, I'm saying I was a full-grown legal adult before I was ever able to articulate anything like that.
Yes. Yes, and I just had to read that because I couldn't help but think about the next woman that we're going to talk about, and women like Sandra Bland, and countless other Black women whose names we don't know,
but
have been harmed by these awful stereotypes and pervasive ideas in our culture. So we support you, Amandla, and we squee for you, and
yes,
we want to protect you and
okay,
take all the time that you need away from social media, and hopefully you do return someday, because we do appreciate your words.
Yes. Okay. So I guess I gotta give her a squeeze. So.
Lord.
It's just for you, my love.
Squee. All right. So, moving on. Please keep those words in mind as we go to our next topic, which is, who is Queen Serena Williams?
Squee!
So much squee. Squee. About almost 2 weeks ago, Serena Williams won her 21st Grand Slam title at Wimbledon in England. She's set to attend the U.S. Open in August, and if she wins there, she'll tie Steffi Graf for most titles won in the modern era, or at least in this recent era. And she'll do it at 33 going on 34, which is astounding when you think that her peers in the sport right now are probably at least 10 years younger than her.
Yeah.
But even as she's set to make history and probably become one of the greatest athletes of all time, and I'm just going to say greatest athletes of all time without qualifiers, not greatest female athlete,
yes,
not greatest tennis player, greatest athlete. She's said to become one of the greatest athletes of all time if she continues,
yes,
at this pace, despite her age. But even as she's set to do that, she's forced to deal with a tremendous amount of hatred, discrimination, racism, sexism, some ugly racialized sexism that's specific to her as a Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great article on Vox that details many incidents from her career where she's been scrutinized for her body, the shape of her body, and body parts, which is not something that she can, you can't, some things you can't control. You can't control your, the way you're built. There's the day that she won Wimbledon, the New York Times printed an article from her peers in the tennis world and their trainers saying that, you know, somebody could probably beat Serena, but none of the tennis players on her circuit want to get bigger or more muscular like Serena, because they are women and want to look like women.
Wow.
Which is, you know, it's basically shade.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, trying to say that Serena is not a woman or does not look like a woman.
Yeah.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg of the kind of crap that is thrown her way, even as she rises above it and continues to break records and win championships. She's been dealing with this intense scrutiny of her body, her behavior, ever since she started her career in the 90s. Sports writers called her fat and lazy. You know, other sports, people in sports media would just attribute her wins to her muscular build and not to, yeah, and not to any sort of skill or mental fortitude.
Yes, like I said, on more than one occasion I've seen her being referred to as brute.
Yeah. Or overpowering and on Twitter she's called a gorilla or dominant and manly. That she's there's comments about her athleticism that are grounded in stereotypes, such as being animalistic and aggressive, or stereotypes that are thrown specifically at black women, that as in calling them masculine, unattractive, and yet hypersexual all at once.
Yes, yeah.
So, mental gymnastics, like you say.
I mean, just the way they just have to, you know, contradict themselves. Like, you know, things make sense and still don't see, you know, the illogic that goes into, you know, the things they say about her. It's just, you know, like you said, it's mind-blowing.
There's a sociologist named Delia Douglas who studies the commentary made about black athletes, who noted that comments about Serena Williams were often couched in the quote, essentialist logic of racial difference, which is long sought to mark the black body as inherently different from other bodies. End quote. Some will even say that, hey, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Some have even pointed at her chest and her behind as factors that have hindered her success. 21 championships doesn't seem.
I don't know. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, she's won 21 championships, but she's not successful. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think. Yeah. Her body has not hindered her in any way. But the fact that they focus on these parts that have nothing to do with her game.
Mm-hmm.
Not instead of focusing on her arms or her legs or her brain that she needs to stay in the game. They want to focus on those sexualized parts, which brings to mind how Europeans viewed Saoirse Bartman, who was called the Hottentot Venus, who was basically treated as a circus sideshow, an exhibit. I think they even placed her, some of her body parts, in museums for people to gawk at after her death.
Yeah.
And I think she was just only recently, maybe in the last decade or so, returned to actual.
Yeah, it was in there in 2002 or 2004. They returned her remains to South Africa, let her be buried.
Just Jesus, just let somebody rest. My God.
Oh, yeah.
That's deeply depraved and sick to just dehumanize someone so much that you would display their private parts in a museum as if they
after
were
they're dead,
as if they were something other than human. You do that with, I don't know, dinosaurs or extinct animals or something. I don't.
I mean, the really horrible thing about that too is like she was dissected. There were just her parts there. It wasn't even like her. It wasn't even like, you know, they preserved, you know, her entire body. They cut her up and dissected her.
Just deeply, deeply, deeply sick.
Yeah.
Douglas continues that the prominence of narratives that depict the Williams sisters as overwhelming and destroying their female opponents are significant, for they call upon enduring stereotypes of the dangerous black body and the strong black woman. She continues to note that the way both Venus's and Serena's strong black female bodies were described as pummeling and overwhelming, as pummeling and overwhelming and overpowering apparently frail and powerless white female opponents. There was a Russian tennis official that I'm not even going to name, but called the Williams sisters brothers, and in that one word managed to hit a triple, hit a trifecta of racism, sexism, and transphobia, all in a word. So it's just wild, the amount of ugliness and hatred and just really sick ideas that people are not afraid to spout when it comes to these two women. There was another incident in 2001 where a sportscaster said that Serena would fit better on the cover of National Geographic than Playboy. And then and then later explained his comment or tried to justify his comment as not being racist, but zoological. Zoological.
I'm like, first of all, okay, she's an athlete. Why would you even think that she would be on either of these magazines in the first place? You know, I mean, that just perfectly sums up how black women's bodies are seen. Either, you know, you're this exhibit to be gawked at, and, you know, and just, you know, studied and whatnot, like you're not even human.
And picked apart.
Or completely sexualized. Is this all that body is good for? And I mean, oh man, that's just disgusting.
Like she's not even human.
Yeah.
Zoological.
She's just.
So this is the kind of deeply ugly, disgusting crap that gets thrown Serena's way and Venus's way, despite all that they try to do for the sport of tennis, for women in the sport of tennis, for black people in general, that they manage to rise above it and continue to succeed is very commendable. But they should not have to. They should not have to deal with this kind of stuff. In 2015, from people who should know better, who should examine these ugly, ugly ideas and where they got them from and how they can extract them from their consciousness and from the collective consciousness of this culture. Go ahead.
Yeah, but it just kills me, you know, this fear, I guess it is, you know, of a black woman being in this, you know, predominantly and I guess traditionally, I would say that in quotations, white space, and then seeing her excel, you know, just kind of, like you said, bringing all of that ugliness out of it. I mean, it's like they have gotten it from all sides, from like from fans, from media, and even, you know, officials, you know, trying to cheat them, you know, when they were younger and trying to make really bad calls against them and things like that. And I mean, I just don't understand, you know, this fear, you know, of black women in these spaces and, you know, just this disdain that they will succeed. You know, I mean, it just makes no sense to me.
And for them to continue to pile on this stuff when it's obviously not working is just a testament to, I don't know, just how deep this runs and how deep the psychopathology of it is. It's just, it's really pathological when you think about it.
It really is.
But I just want to read this one quote from an article in Ms. Magazine to kind of sum this up. Quote, "The real victor in this is Serena, though she's had to endure this kind of derision since she came up in the tennis scene. She continues to win and transcend in the same body that people love to mock." End quote. So, squee! To Serena.
For you, Serena, because I'm like, I don't even think I've heard her even address all the mess that she got, you know, when she won. And she just went and partied at the celebrations, danced with the male winner, and, you know, she's just, you know, rolling along with it. I mean, just, what's it that the president always does? Just rubs it off the shoulder.
Yeah.
Brushes it off.
Yeah.
I mean, bless her heart, because, I mean, if I were her, I swear I'd be the same way she was a few years ago when that official tried to cheat her, and she just went ahead and cussed her out that time, but She is much better than me because there is no way I'd just take it all in stride the way she has and come out intact, still winning and excelling the way she is.
And it's like even if she did say something and speak up against this, she'd be attacked just like a mandala.
Exactly. She'd be angry as if she had no reason to be.
Yeah, as if it there's something wrong with being an angry black woman if you
Yeah.
have if you when you have a reason to be angry. We're not even allowed to be angry. We're not allowed to have feelings and then we're treated as we don't, as if we don't feel. It's just, ah.
Yeah, we're not allowed to have feelings that aren't in service to someone else.
Yeah, so it's a horrible catch 22.
Yeah, because if like we are angry, we better be angry for somebody else and, working for them. But having anger for all the bullshit we go through in our own lives, that's just not acceptable. We're supposed to be, we're supposed to be the bigger gem.
Oh my God. I'm still mad about it, Inda. I've been writing about it all day. You don't know. Okay.
Oh.
Okay. I'm still mad. The more I think about it, the madder I get. Ooh, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
What we need to do now is move on to a new segment. One of our new segments. If you follow Inda on Twitter, and you should, at Inda's Corner on Twitter. You'll notice that she regularly does a thing called Womanist Vocab, and you can find it under the hashtag Womanist Vocab, where she defines a different word that black feminists should know or need to know if you're interested in learning about black feminist thought. So, with that, take it away, Inda. What is your womanist vocab word of this week?
Okay, well, for the first one, I thought we'd just go ahead and define womanism itself.
Okay.
So, a womanist is a womanist, a woman who loves women, appreciates women's culture and power. That's something that you should incorporate into the world as a whole. But actually, I said a woman who loves women and appreciates. But I just think that applies to anyone who loves women and appreciates women's culture. There are a lot of men and non-gender conforming people who definitely qualify as womanists. Womanism addresses racist and classist aspects of white feminism, and it actively opposes separatist ideologies. It also recognizes that black men are integral to black women's lives, as children, lovers, family members, friends, and so forth. And womanism is a way to account for the ways in which black women support and empower black men, and also just kind of gives us the tools to understand our relationships to men and how it differs to white women's. Yeah, I think that's the gist of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. And again, you can find more womanist vocab if you go to Inda's Twitter at Inda's Corner and search under the hashtag womanist vocab. Let's see.
Yeah.
I think
Yeah.
maybe we'll.
Haven't done it lately, but I'll get back to it.
I think we'll fit in maybe one of these other new segments and then I'll wrap it up because
Yeah,
this is
I know
our
which one it's not gonna be.
since this is our second time trying to record this and we want to try to get it out as soon as we can. If not Tuesday, then we'll try to get it out first thing Wednesday. And our new segment is another new segment is Catch the Fade, which is where Enda and I will rant about anything that comes to our mind that we want to rant about. This time I have something that I've noticed lately that I want to that I hope will catch the fade. I've joined a new fandom recently, and the first thing I do when I join a new fandom is I search for fan podcasts about that particular subject. I'll look up information about a show or a book or comics or something like that on Wikipedia and different wikis specific to that piece of media. And what I've found when it comes to the fandom that I just joined, which is Steven Universe, is that there's just too many straight white dude bros hosting Steven Universe fan podcasts, and I'm sure they justify it by the fact that the main protagonist is a little boy, a male, named Steven Universe, but the entire cast of other main characters are female identified characters. They might technically they're genderless gems, but they use gendered pronouns like she and her. So I think that the writers intend for us to view them as female. And Steven, I wouldn't count Steven's father as a main character. He's a secondary character that's male. But still, there's no need for all of these fan podcasts to be hosted by dudes. There's no excuse. Because most of the time, all we're getting is the same viewpoint. You know, you can go from one podcast to another, and you're getting the same viewpoints from the same kind of perspective. And no one wants it. I don't want it.
Yeah.
That's not the perspective I want. I would love to hear more women's voices in this fandom and in other genre media. More queer women's voices, more queer women of color's voices, speaking about the different ways that queerness and racial coding and other things kind of interact in this show, because everybody applauds Steven Universe for getting so much right with regard to queerness, but when you look at how the characters that are coded as people of color are treated within the fandom and on the show itself, there's some things they're not getting quite right, and I'd really love to hear people talk more about that, but since we have all these straight white dude bros, we're never going to hear about that.
Yeah, and it's like they kind of don't understand that this show is pretty much in opposition to everything they stand for. So, I mean, do you just not see that, you know, and just realize that not everything is going to revolve around you?
Yeah, and that's why when you have that direct opposition, you're never going to get the level of analysis that's really interesting to somebody. To somebody like me, to other people who really love the show for the aspects that you don't even want to talk about.
Yeah.
So, please, queer women of color, get yourself a headset, a microphone, download Audacity, sourceforge.net, and make you a Steven Universe podcast, and then link me to it.
Yeah.
Tweet me.
We'll even come talk with you about it, you know,
because I would love to talk with people about that, especially so we can squeeze over Garnett and this,
all her fusions, yes, all her other fusions too.
Yes, and talk about this latest arc of episodes and they got right and what they did not get right. So
yes,
please, women, give us your voices. I need your voices. I'm so tired of listening to these dudes. Okay. So that's who I hope will catch the fade. And, you know, let us know if you like our new segments, Womanist Vocab and Catch the Fade. You can let us know by tweeting us at BlackGirlSquee on Twitter, or emailing us at blackgirlsquee, all one word, @gmail.com. And of course, Inda's Twitter is at Inda's Corner, and mine is at Dust Daughter. You have a number of ways to contact us and let us know what you think of the show. So with that, Inda, you want to hit us off with a Black Girl Commandment?
And this week's Black Girl Commandment, thou shalt acknowledge the excellence that is Serena Williams.
Woohoo! All right. Thanks for listening to the show. Bye.
People in love, they got magic. Look at that boy, he got magic. Big girl, you got magic. Big sky.
Oh my gosh, this shouldn't have taken this long. Okay, I'm gonna have to cut all this out. All right.